All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. We are going to get started here. Let me take a look at the board right now. Questions are starting to come in, but they're still pretty light. We're going to do 1 or 2 hours today, depending on how many questions we have. I'm not going to do any open, so I'm going to try to get to as many calls as possible. So today would be a great opportunity. Calls are pretty light right now, but they're starting to roll in. If you've got a question, a comment, a topic, press 1 on your phone right now. I guarantee we'll get to you. The longer you wait, the harder it is to get through. But right now, you would be able to get through. So we're going to get started. I'll keep you updated on the calls and questions.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers. If you've got a question about thing at all, you've come to the right place. Call me up, ask your question, and we'll talk about it here on the air. And tonight, we're just going to jump right into the questions and get to as many as we can. We're going to start off in Pennsylvania. Ken, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. I'm up here at home in Pennsylvania. I've called several times in the past. I own a farm up here, and I don't know if that rings a bell, but anyways, I have a compliment to start the show off with. I've been in the trucking industry for 35 years, 17 as an owner operator. I downloaded your ebook. I figured, why not? I'm not one of these guys getting started, but heck, what's the worst thing I could do? Might even learn something.
Right.
I just wanted to, what's that?
I said, right. Who knows? Sometimes we'll learn something.
Well, I like to at least learn one thing every day, and usually especially when I listen to the show, I learn more than one. But I did listen to that, and I just wanted to say that was well written. And the good thing is I've worked through all of them things that you shouldn't be supposed to, you shouldn't be doing. So
right.
I just kind of wanted to throw that compliment out there. I enjoyed that.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome, sir. I've got three questions since we're on tax questions lately. First one, real easy. I have an APU, and after talking to Kim and, of course, listening to your show, I'm getting ready to use your software. So I'm gearing up to get my paperwork in line so that it'll be really easy for me to input that information. Now, that I run an APU, and when you run an APU, you're paying road tax on that fuel that you're sucking out of your tank. Now, I just got done printing my logs out for the month, so I put starting miles and ending miles for the month right on that January 31st log. So that way, it's right on top. I'll slip that in for the month. So that gives me my total miles, but I also put my starting APU and ending APU hours. What is your take on what's the proper procedure for calculating the amount of fuel, which you can only estimate, and the road tax for the use of that APU like a reefer unit would?
Right. So There are two ways. One, most people probably aren't going to do, and that's fine. One would be to put a separate tank on there so you're tracking actual gallons. That would be the best, but I don't think it's necessary. We can take your hours that you're logging and use the manufacturer's average fuel consumption for that unit. Just about every APU I've ever seen, the manufacturer puts out a number that says this unit uses X number of gallons per hour, and we could certainly go by that number. So you would multiply that times your total hours for the year, and that's what we'd use as the number to claim that credit.
Okay, so if the unit uses 2 to 3 tenths, I would be safe to use 3 tenths and just calculate.
I would use
the
high side.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. Only because, you know, your APU is powering your block heater, and especially in these temperatures, you know, the winter months, we're really running a lot of stuff on here, and you can hear that motor laboring, Don. The thought about putting another tank on, I would have liked to have done that. The problem is finding the room to put a big enough tank on so you're not constantly filling that thing up, you know?
Yeah, I agree. That's why I don't think it's necessary. We can use the hours and just calculate it.
Okay. On to the next one. Listen to the show over the weekend. Yesterday's show was pretty amazing, and I love to hear the new callers calling in. You went over the child in your business discussion again yesterday, and when I first heard that, I was all excited. A couple of days ago, you brought up the fact that you can get your kids involved in your business. Yesterday, you said kids, you know, adopted children, grandchildren, but not nieces and nephews. I have a specific scenario that I want to bring up to you. We now have a 10-year-old. We never had kids, but now I got a 10-year-old going on 11. Bum mother, which is my niece. So this is my great niece, which makes me and my wife, or my wife and I, great aunt and uncle. So she was signed, basically dropped in our lap, and we were trying to get permanent custody of her. But her mom's a control freak, and she likes to push everybody's buttons. So in the best interest of the child, we just kind of let her sign the paperwork as temporary custody. And this child knew nothing, basically, when she came here. And we're really trying to guide her in the right direction. And one of the things that we've absolutely struggled with is work ethic. But she loves money. So my thought was to take your advice, make her work, put $150 a month into a Roth IRA, and but when you said nieces and nephews, what is your take on my particular scenario? Because I would really like to make this work mostly for her.
Yeah, I would claim her. She's living in your home. I wouldn't worry about all the details as far as permanent custody, temporary custody. The fact that you're providing her sole support, she's living in the house, I would clearly take that one. And I don't think the IRS would ever argue that. You know, the other thing is, anytime we take these deductions, when you look at an owner-operator and that group, they get audited less than 1% of the time. So the odds of an audit are pretty slim. Not every audit goes over everything on the tax return. Sometimes they just pick and choose. So when you look at the risk here, even if we're wrong, the risk is so ridiculously low that I wouldn't worry about it. But I think in your case, she's living under your roof, you're providing sole support, I would clearly claim the tax credit for her working.
Great. That's good, because we are acting as her parents.
Yeah.
You know, and as far as the school's concerned, we're her parents. We're her real guardians. And even though her mom just wouldn't sign the paperwork more than temporary, I really believe that she's going to be in our life and living here for as long as she needs to. So that's great news.
Yeah, and she would also, the other thing that's going to strengthen this, because of the way the arrangement is, her living there and you providing sole support, she's going to be a dependent on your tax return as well. And then that just strengthens the case for paying her to work in the business.
Well, let me clarify that. Her mom is she undermines so badly anybody in her family that she can undermine, she will. Last tax year, she never even told us that she was going to claim the child that we have been putting on the school bus every day. And, of course, talked to an attorney and had some discussion with her. And that part of it is not a good scenario. Now, I haven't learned how things are going to go this year because I got in her face about it real bad. And
okay.
Hold that thought.
I'll come back and address that. And I think you've got another question. The music's playing. I've got to get to a break. We'll come back and get right to that. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. Let me go back to the phones. I was talking with Ken in Pennsylvania. So, Ken, here's what I would do with that. If you have to keep peace in the family and you don't want to push the dependent issue, not a big deal. Because if it ever came down to a challenge by the IRS, she would lose. I mean, she can fight and claim the child all she wants, but in an audit, the IRS is going to look at the true living situation, nothing else, and determine that if this child's anybody's dependent, it's yours. So you can let that go. You don't have to fight that. You don't have to claim her as a dependent. If you can, you should. But if you can't, let it go. I would still claim what you're paying her, because if it came down to an argument, she is your dependent.
And I don't know what the consequences are for her. I mean, her claiming a child that she's never cared for in the last 2.5 years is just ridiculous. She set herself up for trouble. But we've just kind of fluffed it off because our interest is in the best interest of the child. Great advice, kind of the way I was thinking. But, you know, we all listen to the show because, you know, we take your advice very seriously. Last question. This is about IRAs. I let's see, trying to figure out how I can make this real short. In a previous show, I told you about me being in an accident and suffered some hardship for working on almost 2 years. Back in 2014, to survive, I had to tap into a rollover IRA from back when I worked with the Teamsters. And I also had started a Roth IRA for my wife and I. So when you have no income from a hardship, you gotta keep going. So I had to tap in to my Roth, my rollover and my Roth IRAs. In 2014, since I couldn't work, I had taken like $41,400 total in like $5,000 increments. I didn't want to take a big lump sum because I really didn't want to touch it. Well, now we're having to kind of deal with this situation because early withdrawal before the age of 59 and a half, and the I'm understanding that there's a 10% on that total amount. So here's my question. I work with ATBS and have since we very first heard you on the XM radio. So I've been working with them, and he's asking for a basis number and a gain number. And when I contacted the company that I have the Roth IRAs and the rollover IRA with, they give me the gain for 2014, since that's where the issue really is. But did I need the gains for all of it back to day one for that $41,400?
Here's the thing. These are actually going to be treated differently. The IRA, we don't need a gain on that at all. Everything that comes out of the IRA will be taxable and subject to the penalty, although we need to run it through the hardship rules and see if we can get an exception on the penalty. There are some hardships that allow you to take it out. You will still pay the tax, but depending on the rules and the timing, we might be able to avoid the 10% penalty. Now, the Roth is where the basis comes in. The reason for that is you can pull contributions out of the Roth with no tax and no penalty, but you can't pull out earnings. If you pull out earnings, then you pay the tax and the penalty for early withdrawal. So this gets fairly complicated, and what you probably need to do is the tax preparer needs to work with somebody at the mutual fund company because it cuts down on mistakes, you know, transferring information in between. There's several different treatments on all this, and it's not all that simple.
Yeah, and I just made it a point. I told my wife, I said, I got to call Kevin on this. I need a second opinion because, just like you say, you would think that the interpretation of the rules would be cut and dry, but I was pretty sure that there was IRS exceptions for hardship. And there's no way for me to know that. And I just want to make sure.
Of course, the IRS never makes them simple. I mean, they're you got to jump through all the hoops. What we have to do is somebody who understands it, your tax preparer or a financial advisor, and somebody's got to run the situation through the rules and see what applies and what doesn't. And then the fact that one is an IRA and one is a Roth complicates things even more because the treatment on those is different. That's where we're going to need the basis to know what was contribution and what was earnings, because they'll be treated differently coming out of the Roth, but they'll be treated the same coming out of the IRA. I know, it's crazy. So let them work through it. I would have the tax preparer involved with the mutual fund company. If for some reason they can't come to an agreement, call me back and we'll see what we can figure out. Let's go to Texas. Dean, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. I'm a company driver right now, and when I get back to California, I'm going to end up switching to an owner-operator. I'm going to be buying a 2007 Columbia, no, Century, I'm sorry, and it's my boss's truck, and I'm going to be paying him $500 a week for 6 months or whatever. He wants $12,000 for the truck, and I'm trying to do everything right. I'm on your text list. I'm on your email list. I got the downloaded ebook. The only thing I haven't been able to get is your program, which I plan on getting. I just have to find the spare cash for it.
Okay.
My question is, as far as like the profit gauges, should I start that from day one, or should I run for a month or two and then start it once I have some numbers?
No, absolutely. Start from day one. The reason being is, you know, I actually recommend when somebody knows they're going to become an owner-operator, start 6 months early. You know, use the truck that's your company truck and get used to playing around and putting in receipts and expenses and that kind of stuff, because it's just good practice. And
right. Once
you start, absolutely from day one, have the account, go through our training, know how to use it, you're going to be way ahead of the game. If you wait a month, you're just that much further behind, and you know, it's going to get busy and you're going to have a lot of stuff going on. So the sooner you start, the better.
Okay. Okay. And then my wife is going to be the one doing most of the bookkeeping while I'm on the road. All I do is drive California to Texas. I don't do anything else. So when I get that program, should I have her watch it also and read it and do the bookwork or whatever it is?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I've got a question. If you have to run California, why are you buying an 07?
Because right now I live in California, but at the beginning of the year, we're moving to Idaho.
So you won't run California anymore?
No.
Okay, so ideally, you would rather have an 03 or earlier. I'm assuming you're buying this one because the boss is making it so easy.
Yeah. It basically, it's $500 a week. In 6 months, it'll be mine. In the past, I've done two different lease purchases, and one of them turned out real bad. The other one turned out real bad, too. I almost had the truck. I was buying a W900, and I had 6 months left on the payments, and the company went belly up, and I lost the truck.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that ever again. And we're buying a house. Now we're selling a house, but my income to debt ratio is high, and I'm not able to get good rates or whatever to buy a truck. I've been looking into it for about a year, and my boss said that he's getting ready to get rid of one of his trucks, and we got to talking, and we came up with this deal of $500 a week, and it's minus 6 months.
You know, there's not a whole lot of risk in that one. So it's not my favorite truck, but this may be a good opportunity for you without a lot of risk. And if you're moving out of California, then that makes sense. I was wondering why in 07 if you had to be California compliant. So, keep doing what you're doing. Call me back. We'll talk about this and we'll help you through. Stick around. We'll be right back with more stuff. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Thank you. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The number to join us, well, never mind the number. The website is letstruck.com. We're going to get back to some phone calls. Let's go to Ohio. Tim, welcome to the program.
Hello. I got a question for you on switching to super singles.
Okay, go ahead.
I was trying to just replace my tires because they were, I have a set of XDA3s on, and I was wanting to switch to the X-Line Energy GD in a low-pro 24.5, but Michelin seems to have them on national back order. So in order to acquire a SmartWay verified fuel-efficient tire, I decided to go ahead and switch to the Super Singles. And anyway, the inventory was tight on those even to find those, but the I have a 96 379 with 370 rears, and I know I'm going to drop a little bit on my RPM going to the smaller diameter tire. Would I be better off switching out differentials on that to so I can run in direct on that?
What's in there now, you said?
I got a 379 Pete with 370 rears and a 15 speed.
Okay, so you could switch differentials and run in direct. It's not absolutely necessary, and at today's fuel price, it's going to take you probably at least 2 years to break even. You know, if we go back to $4 fuel, then it starts to make a little more sense. I think for now I would switch the tires. You're going to see the fuel increase from the tires, and that RPM change isn't going to make a horrible difference. You're still going to see a net gain in fuel economy, and spending the $4,000 to change out differentials, it's just, the payback just isn't going to be quick enough, I think.
Okay. Then the disinformation that I have found on people actually telling you on correct information on switching here, because one dealer told me I need 2-inch offset wheels. Another says 0 offset wheels. So what do you recommend on the wheels?
0. Hey, and we've done a lot of testing on this. We've worked with Mike Beckett at MD Alignment because he sees thousands and thousands of tires. And we've been working on this since 2007 when I switched all my trucks over. We get a lot of calls. Hands down, the 0 offset works. Sometimes the 2-inch offset is okay, but there's no way to predict which truck is going to handle the 2-inch offset, what isn't. So when we go with 0 offset, we eliminate all the problems.
Okay. Well, because I didn't acquire that valuable information before, I bought a set of wheels off of a used or wrecked truck that was on a Pete, nearly same as mine, but a little newer, that was running the wheels. And the reason why I done that was because all the wheel numbers match the part numbers. Now,
right
on Alcoa wheels, I went through 30 pairs of wheels, and none of the wheels, none of the numbers matched on the part numbers on the wheels. Is that a critical thing? Excuse me.
And the other issue, the good news is if you buy 2-inch offset, all you have to do is flip them around the other way, and they're virtually a 0. They end up being like 3/4 of an inch offset, I think, and those still work. So if you have 2-inch offset rims, just flip them.
So actually turn them around, run the
yep, turn
shiny,
them around.
Shiny side in. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Sometimes you've got to modify the valve stem to make it long enough, but it's not a big deal, and flipping that rim works.
Great. Okay. Then on setting up your profit gauges, how do I go about doing that?
Setting it up for what? Just initially, you mean?
Yeah, initially, how do I go about getting that done?
The best way is to call us, and what we do, we have our startup program, and we'll set you up an appointment. Brittany does all our training, and she'll get on. If you have a computer available, we'll get on, we'll screen share, so you can see what's going on. We'll set up the accounts for you, show you how we're doing it, and then train you on how to get started. We'll even do the first month for you so that it's all set up and done.
Is it still too late to get my 2015 stuff all put on?
Oh, no, absolutely not. If you were to go in and sign up now, even on the free trial, you'd be able to do 2015. Or if you sign up for the program, you can go back and do the whole year.
Great. Okay. So what gears do you think I should go to? Because I'm getting a little, I've got a million and a quarter on this truck, and it's probably
okay.
Time to start looking at doing the differentials.
Yeah, if I were going to do anything based on what you've got, I would go at 279s and then run indirect, and you'd have two gears over that. So and that may make sense, even though you may not get a quick enough payback fuel mileage-wise. If they're high mileage and it's time to change them anyway, then I would look for 279s. Let's go to Atlanta. Philip, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Good. What can I help you with today?
I'm a small carrier, and I've got a question about rate per mile for the owner-operators. I'm trying to help them understand better about their numbers. And a question that comes up a lot is in the revenue that we pay them. So we pay them their trips. And, you know, if you look at their settlement statement, you can see those trips. You can see detention, you can see layovers, and you can also see where we reimburse them for tolls. And so when they take their total revenue number, reimbursed tolls are a part of that figure, and I'm using that as their rate of pay. That's how much we pay them, their per mile pay. And they don't think that's fair.
They don't think it's fair. I'm not sure I understand the fair part. Why not?
That's what I'm saying. It's part of their revenue. We're paying them. They just don't think that when I say that I'm paying them $1.05 a mile, they're saying part of that money is, or $1.20 a mile, part of that money is not really what I'm paying them. It's just reimbursing them for an expense.
Well, then tell them, okay, I won't reimburse you for an expense. I mean, I've never understood this logic. There's two things here. One, whether we think it's fair or not, which I don't even understand the word fair in this context. It is what it is. The other one is, how do we handle it tax-wise? Now, if we follow, you know, generally accepted accounting practices, since it is technically an expense reimbursement, the correct and easiest way to handle it tax-wise is, in order to get a toll reimbursed, they turn in the receipts to you. You reimburse them for the expense. You take the expense as a tax deduction, and they ignore it completely, and it shouldn't be shown as revenue.
It should
not.
That
would be the correct thing. Not
okay.
Accounting-wise. You're still giving them money. So
yeah.
It's the accounting side. If we just want to handle it correctly on accounting, then it's a wash to them. You treat the expense as though it was yours. They have no expense, and they don't, and they have no revenue. They just, it's a wash for them. They put the money out of their own pocket, but you gave it back. It's a non-issue when it comes to taxes, and it shouldn't show up anywhere on their tax return. That would be the correct way to handle it. Now, if you continue doing what you're doing, which is showing it as revenue to them, then they need to keep the receipt, or at least a copy of the receipt, and they would deduct it as an expense, and you wouldn't. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. One of us has to do it, but I guess that's the question, is which one of us should do it. I I have been doing it for 10 years by giving them the revenue or including it on their 1099 is what I've been doing.
Got it. Okay, so let me get to a break, and I'll come back, and I'll explain why there's nothing wrong with that. Well, there is, and I'll explain to you what I think is wrong with it, and then you decide if you want to change or not. Stick around. We'll be right back with Kevin Rutherford. All right, so a quick heads up, we're heading into the fourth segment of the first hour. Let me give you a heads up on questions. We're going to do a second hour. It looks like if you were to press one on your phone right now, quickly, I should be able to get to your call or question in the second hour. The longer you wait, the harder it is to get through, but it looks like if you do it right now, I might be able to get to you. So we are going to go ahead and start recording again. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're heading into the final segment. I'm going to get right back to the phone calls. I was talking with Philip in Atlanta. So, Philip, there's nothing wrong with the way you're doing it. Where I see the problem, because I see the other side of this so often, is the owner-operator himself isn't clear on how this should be handled. And because they turned the receipt into you, there's a good chance they're not taking the tax deduction for it, but it's showing up as revenue for them. And it doesn't really matter which way we do it, as long as everybody's clear and everybody's getting the proper deduction. If it's revenue to them, then they get the tax deduction. If it's not revenue to them, if it's just a reimbursement, then they don't get the tax deduction. But where I see the problem is so many times owner-operators turn in the receipt and then never take that deduction, even though it's being shown as revenue to them.
Right. Yep, that makes sense. I'm showing it up. It's an expense for me because I'm paying the owner-operator, right? It's part of my driver expense. So I'm getting
correct.
The deduction
now,
for my taxes.
Well, see, if you show it as revenue to them and then take the tax deduction, that's incorrect. Because once you've shown it as revenue to them, that's already the deduction. So now if you then take that receipt and show it as an expense, you've now taken it twice.
Yeah, I'm not actually taking the receipt and showing it twice. I'm just
okay.
It's part of the money that I'm paying them, so it's money going out for driver expense collectively.
Got it. And if you want to keep it that way, it's fine. I would just make it very, very clear to them that they should be keeping a copy of that receipt and they should be deducting it as an expense on their tax return.
And then on the flip side is, if I want to make it easy on them, which, you know, that's really what I want to do, right? I want to eliminate any hassle I can for them. I want them to love me. So.
Yeah.
If I wanted to switch this around, I would just run my 1099 report without toll reimbursements and then
yep.
book that as a separate transaction, as a separate driver expense transaction, and everybody's happy. Their
exactly.
revenue is lower,
and then the owner-operator.
Pay less tax.
Exactly. And then the owner-operator has to do nothing. It's a non-issue for them. It is easier for them, and there's less chance of mistake.
Yeah. And do I show that on the statement still? Just keep showing it the way I've been showing it? Just remove it from the 1099?
The either way is fine. If you want to show it so that they see it, which I think is a good idea, it's psychological. They see you're paying an expense, but then it's not going to show up as revenue. That would be just fine.
Okay. Sounds good. Thanks, brother.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to Indiana. Melissa, welcome to the program.
Okay. Hi, Kevin. Are you on your balance board?
Oh, that didn't happen.
I am, actually.
So am I.
Oh, cool. How do you like it?
Yeah, it's great. I was jealous of yours, so I looked for one for myself, and I got myself a circular one because that long one wouldn't fit back in the sleeper, but the circular one is perfect.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. I like it. You can really feel the burn. I feel it in my calves, and I even tried to do it while we were going down the road.
I bet that's interesting.
Yes, the hardest part is centrifugal force when you go around a curve. That's the hardest part.
I'll bet. Yeah, well, that's good, though.
Yeah, it's real good. But we have some samples that we wanted you to take a look at.
All right, let's see what we've got going on here. Looks like on the rear differential, we've got a level 2 on dirt, nothing horrible. Silicon is just dirt. It's not horrible. It's fairly common. It gets in through the vent. Sometimes if we have a bad seal, by the time we replace the seal, we get a little bit of dirt and grime in there. Did you change the differential fluid?
Yes.
Okay, then there's nothing to worry about. There's nothing in this component that shows any excess wear or problems. And once you change the fluid, then the dirt's gone, so you're good. We're good on that one. Let's take a look at the front differential. Same thing, a little bit of dirt, and then we got some iron. And the iron's not horrible, but again, there's nothing in here that indicates there was a problem. There was just some dirt in there. The dirt caused some wear. That's where the iron probably came from. But if we've changed the fluid, then you're good on this one. And congratulations on doing the sample, because now we know you have new fluid.
Yep.
We're good there, and everything's taken care of. So let's take a look at the coolant. What do we got going on here?
Now, we took the sample from the reservoir. Is that a good place to take it from, or no?
Not necessarily. At some trucks, it sits a little stagnant in that reservoir. It doesn't get exchanged a lot. So it's better if we can pull it somewhere in the coolant that's been circulating more. But this is a standard, not a long life, right?
Right.
And what are you using to recharge your coolant? Or do you have a water filter that you're using?
No, we put in PennCool.
Okay. So all it's showing, we were a little low on nitrate. So just keep the additive package up on it and, you know, test once in a while. If you can find a place on the truck where you can get the coolant that's circulating more often, that would be better. But this looks good, too.
Okay. We actually change our coolant twice a year, right before summer and right before winter. Is that what we should be doing?
Yeah, that's a good idea when you're using the conventional coolant. Twice a year is good timing, and then just sample once in a while, keep your additive package up, and you'll be fine.
Okay, good. Excellent. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. I think I have enough time to squeeze in another call here. Let's go to Texas. Adam, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Kevin. Hey, afternoon, Kevin. Hey, I got two questions for you. One was about being able to carry a firearm in the truck. I've heard a couple of shows where they talk about it, but you always seem kind of confused still at the end. Like it's just never clarified that well, and I know the laws change from state to state, and I guess I just wanted to hear your opinion on it. And
from what I've been able to gather and read, there is a lot of confusion because if we look at FMCSA, there's no restrictions against it on the federal level because they don't really address it. Gun laws come down to not only state, but actually local. I mean, there are cities that have gun ordinances that are different than the state itself. So what it comes down to is because we never know where you're going to travel, odds are that if you carry a weapon in a commercial vehicle, at some point you're going to violate somebody's laws. But knowing who's and when's, and then we have the other issue of having a permit and a multi-state permit, and there's different options available there. So my take is at some point, if you have a weapon in a commercial vehicle, you are going to be violating somebody's gun laws. Then my thought on it is tough. If I decide I'm going to carry a gun, then I'll just carry the gun and deal with it, you know, if something happens. And that's an individual choice. People want to hear that here's the way you do it. You go get this permit. It just doesn't exist. There's nothing you could do to make it legal to have that gun everywhere. So you've got to make the personal decision, am I willing to take that risk? If I go get my proper permits, I'll probably be legal 90% of the time, but it's really tough to say. I think that's why you hear so much confusion.
Right. I had talked to one gentleman that told me that he had a permit in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Florida, and then that covered him everywhere. But then you hear about driving through Chicago or New York,
or Washington, D.C. That's what I mean. There are some local ordinances where you're going to have to decide, you know, the local ordinance would take precedent. And that's where I say you might be legal 90% of the time if you do everything right. But becoming legal 100% of the time, I think, is impossible from what I can gather. The music's playing. That means I've run all out of time on this show. Be sure to check out the website, sign up for our newsletter and text messages, download your free ebook, and look for lots more resources coming. Always, letstruck.com. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time. Be safe, be profitable, and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Hey, Adam, I know you had another question, so I'm going to come back to you right when we start this show. So let me give everybody a heads up on questions before we get started. Looks like we're pretty solid on questions, so I'm just going to go ahead and start the second hour. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers. Whatever it is, if you've got a question, bring it to the table. We'll tackle it here on this show. You can also check out the website. In fact, go to the website and get signed up for our newsletters, our text messages. You can download your free ebook. We've got webinars coming here in the next couple weeks. My goal is to put out a new educational piece once a month this year. I'm actually doing pretty good because I tackled a pretty big one in January, and I only fell a couple days short. Should be able to get that out sometime in the first week in February. That one, that's a webinar, an ebook, an audio book, all free, all about how to get started as an owner-operator. And I want to do something like that. My goal is every month this year. So we might do an ebook, audiobook, webinar on understanding fuel tax. And I want to make these free resources, and that's kind of our way of giving back. We've had a great couple years, and I want to give back to the industry. So that's my goal. We'll see if I'm able to hit it every month. I'm pretty stoked that I came very close to getting the first one done this month. It was a big one, and there was new technology to learn. I've got a lot of hours in it, but I think now I'll be able to crank some more out. So if you get on our newsletter list, you will know, and we will send you those resources as we get them. I have lots of plans, doing stuff on fuel mileage, on taxes, on, you know, reading financial statements, on the keto paleo diet. I have a whole slew of ideas, and again, I'm going to try to get to one a month. So go to the website, letstruck.com. You can download the ebook on the first project. The webinar is coming. You can download the audio book there on the site. And then also in the bottom left corner, you'll see the sign up for the newsletter. And that puts you on our general email list. So when we release a new product, idea, ebook, those kind of things, we will shoot you out an email so you know what's going on. Again, go to letstruck.com, sign up in the bottom left corner, and also sign up and get your free ebook and audiobook. I'm going to head off to Texas to get started today. Adam, welcome to the program.
Hey there, Kevin. Yeah, my other question was, I was at the I-80 here not too long ago, and I saw your scan gauge there, and I noticed there was two different ones. I was looking at them through the glass, and they were different prices, but I didn't really see the difference in any wording on there, the difference between the two. Is there two different ones that you have?
Not that we have. So the original company, Linear Logic, puts out a scan gauge that was primarily designed for RVs, but has the same, RVs have all the same connectors as Class 8 trucks do. That was their original model. That was the one that I found, started testing, and came up with all of my ideas to make it better and make it truck specific. So ours has a lot of additional features. Ours does the smoothed out fuel economy using that 7-second average that we developed. That's a big change. And ours also has like the profit gauges numbers in it as well. So you can calculate profit after fuel, profit per mile, all of that going down the road. So if it says scan gauge KR, that's our upgraded version that is much better programmed for a truck. The original scan gauge might be their D model, scan gauge D, I think. It'll work if you plug it into a truck. You're just not going to get all of our upgrades and features.
Right. Okay. I'll probably order it off your website then and get the right one. Another question I have for you, that, Kevin, is I heard also if you have that, like I drive a 2010 ProStar. Will that thing, like when I have something going on, that will give me a code on there, won't it, to tell me what's going on with my truck? I thought I heard something like that.
It will, but you won't hear me talk about that much because it's not really consistent. And that's just because the ECMs are all over the board. They throw all kinds of false codes. They throw what are called ghost codes. So even technicians plugging in the laptop and the software, not all the codes they get are doing anybody any good. We do have people call and say, oh, my God, you know, the skin gauge saved me $3,000 on a repair because the code came up. We knew exactly what it was. We fixed it ourselves instead of going to the shop. It does happen once in a while. You won't hear me promote that feature a lot because it doesn't always work, and I don't want people to think that every time something goes wrong with their truck, you know, the skin gauge is going to diagnose it. It's not going to happen.
Right. Okay. Well, thanks, Kevin. I just want to let you know, too, I've been doing that ketogenic diet here for a couple months. I lost 25 pounds, and I really like it. So thank you for that, and you have a great day.
Excellent. Excellent. Congratulations. Love hearing that. We get that a lot, and I love that. Let's go to Mexico. John, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How's it going?
Good. What's on your mind today?
I'm looking at a 95 Volvo truck, and I want to see if you can find any reasons why I shouldn't buy it more than I have already. It's a 95 Volvo. We call it a white GMC, yep. 9-speed, 12.7, 1.6 on the total truck, 800 on a new in-frame, 370 rears, low pro 22.5 Continentals, XZ83 front end, and... it's about what I know.
How much?
Trying to find 65.
Have you run a rig dig on it yet?
No.
I would run the VIN number through rig dig. If you go to rigdig.com/letstruck, you'll get our discount. And
okay.
It's just a good idea. It's simple. It's easy. It might tell us, you know, the thing's been in 3 rollover accidents, you know, whatever. As long as that rig dig comes back relatively clean. I'm not looking for a perfect report on a 95 truck, but relatively clean, nothing major, you know, nothing like it, you know, was in a flood, you know, 5 years ago or those kind of things. And that's the kind of stuff we could find out. If it comes
he's
back
an older
no
gentleman.
Major, if, go ahead.
He's an older gentleman, 69, and it's been with Landstar for 5 years, and he's just tired of doing it all himself, and he's finishing out his last 2 years with another Landstar BCO. So he just parked
it
on the,
yeah.
The first week of the month, January. So.
Yeah, run the rig dig, and if that rig dig comes back without anything major, then I would be all over this thing. I can't think of any reason not to buy it. This is a solid truck, great specs. This could be a 7 mile per gallon truck right out of the gate, and we could possibly
get
it to 8.
Well, that's what he runs at 65, and that's about his average, he said, was high sixes, low sevens.
That's what I figured, so that's solid. Go ahead.
He said it's using about a gallon of oil every 10,000, and then most of that is being leaked out. So I'm assuming that's a motor that could potentially have another 300,000-400,000 left in it.
Oh yeah, yeah. I sounds like you've got, you know, a couple good years out of this, and at that price, it is so hard to go wrong. I mean, you look at these guys in lease purchase programs. Some guys are spending more in 2 months. Then you're going
to
spend on this entire truck.
You don't have to sell me. But the one last question is that a candidate for a bull gear before we go any?
Not necessarily, but I would have it inspected.
Run it.
You can inspect that and see if there's any excessive play in it. If not, I'd just be fine.
All righty. Well, thank you for everything that you do. Say hi to Diesel.
Will do. And, sounds like you found a good one. How do you go wrong with a $6,500 truck with good specs? Really. I love it. It's such a much lower risk way of getting into the business. Let's head off to Virginia. JW, welcome to the program.
Hey, hi, KR, JW here.
I wasn't paying attention. The music started playing right when I picked you up. I should watch the clock once in a while. But I'll get to a break. We'll come back, and you and I will talk about whatever it is that's on your mind today. check out the website. It's letstruck.com. Get signed up for our newsletters. We'll keep you informed of all the exciting stuff we've got going on this year. Letstruck.com. We'll be right back with Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I'm going to go back now to Virginia. JW, go ahead.
Yeah, JW, Penny Stacker from Virginia here. Before I lose you in the hills, did you know that if you cook a potato and brown rice today, and according to Dr. Joe, you put it in the refrigerator and then eat it tomorrow, it will reduce the calories by 50%. And the only thing I don't know is, does that reduce the carbohydrates by 50%? Have you ever heard of anything like this?
I have never heard of that, and I would be interested to know how that's occurring, where the calories are disappearing to.
Apparently that process, they become what he called restricted calories or whatever, and thus the body is not able to pull the calories out of it. I thought that was just fascinating information because I haven't had a baked potato or brown rice in a long time, and it's like, gee, I wonder if that'll work on sweet potatoes.
That would be very interesting. I will go see if I can find any reading material on that. I'll start with his and see. Most
and
of the time when I read his articles, he's very good at putting in his references so I could follow stuff backwards.
I'm back to driving again today, and I thought, who better to do the research than KR?
I will go do that because his stuff's easy to research. Like I said, he's very good at documenting where the information comes from. And
I thought that was incredible. I like baked potato every once in a while, and that it just put it back on the menu, you know.
Well, I eat a lot of sweet potato, and I tend to cook a whole. I roast mine, so I tend to cook 4 or 5 big sweet potatoes at a time and then throw them in the refrigerator because they're great to grab and just heat up. And if it's also knocking out a bunch of calories, that would be pretty amazing.
Well, and then knocking out the carbs at the same time, that's kind of like one of them details. So, like I say, fascinating.
It is. I will see what I can find out about that. Thank you for the heads up.
All right, see ya. Thanks again.
All right, take care. Let's head off to Michigan. Nick, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, Kevin. Question, I remember hearing you say that they raised the rate for per diem this year for your per diem. I can't remember what the new rate is.
Okay, so I'll try to make this clear because we're right in that time frame where it's going to get confusing if I don't make this clear. So right now, when you are sitting down to do your 2015 tax return, you actually have to use two rates to calculate your per diem, and you have to make sure your tax preparer understands this because many, many tax preparers miss this. In 2015, We had one rate that covered your overnights from January 1st to September 30th. That was $59 a day. Then from October 1st to the end of the year, the new rate was $63 a day. Now that we're in 2016, the current rate right now is $63 a day. We have no idea if they'll raise it again in the fourth quarter, probably not. But so doing the 2015 taxes, you use two rates, depending on when the overnight occurred, and right now in 2016, the rate is $63. Does that make sense?
Yep, perfect clear. I also had another question. Got a Detroit Series 60 pre-emission. I was wondering, would the FAST system help improve the fuel economy, being with having a higher fuel pressure to the rail?
It does. Not only do we have better pressure, more consistent pressure, but we're also getting all the air out. The Series 60 is probably one of the most consistent engines I see responding to the FAST. You know, sometimes on the ISX, we get an increase with the FAST. Sometimes we don't. The Series 60 seems to be pretty consistent. We get good throttle response, really good for the injectors, and we usually see a noticeable bump in fuel economy.
All right. Well, that was my question. Thanks for answering them.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to Pennsylvania. Thomas, welcome to the program.
Hey, boss. How you doing this evening?
Doing good. What's on your mind today?
Well, I've been driving for about 7 years. I can only claim about one of it, little over one, about 18 months, because, you know, what I started with was on the farm, pulling a hopper bottom, you know, chasing a combine. So technically it wasn't, you know, commercial motor vehicle, it was farm equipment. However, I've dropped off into the into a 2-year lease. It was a pickup from another driver who had fallen off it. He had decided that it wasn't for him, he didn't want the headache. And I'm just looking for some pointers on how I can get through this, because right now my balloon payment is sitting at around $30,000. I'm a trainer, so that's going to go down. I can expect around a 40-50% reduction in that before my lease is over. I got 150,000 miles on a 2015 KWT 680 and have no idea where to start. Like, once my lease is over. Right now I'm still contracted, so I know what to do now. It's just like, once it's over, do I stay where I'm at? Do I get my own authority and move on, or, you know? So.
Well, the first key to making good business decisions, and I hear this a lot. People say, should I do this? Should I buy a new truck? Should I replace this truck? Should I rebuild it? Should I get my own authority? Should I switch carriers? I have one clear starting point for making all business decisions. Now, it's not the end-all, be-all. It's not the only thing I look at, but I have a clear starting point, and without it, I think making decisions is kind of crazy. The problem is most people who call me don't have the one thing I need to help them make the decision, and that's a good profit and loss statement where we can see the numbers. I mean, you say, you know, what you're doing or what you should be doing right now. Do you have a business report or a profit and loss you look at every month?
Well, I signed paperwork on the truck 3 days ago, so no, not yet.
Got it. Okay. Well, then that's what we want, because what if your numbers come back after the first month and we find out that true net profit, the money you're getting to keep, is only 25 cents a mile?
That's going to stink.
It's not unusual. I've had several cases. Last year I had two that I worked with where the guys were making 13 cents a mile. We got them out of their leases and into their own truck, and they're doing 60 cents a mile now. I mean, it was crazy numbers. there are lots of people running around in lease purchase programs that aren't making anywhere near what they could make just driving somebody else's truck with no risk. You have a tremendous amount of risk in this program. What? How long is your lease?
Yeah, it's 2.5 years left on the lease. It was a 5-year lease initially, but the guy before me, he made the mistake of paying money forward on a truck he wasn't sure he wanted to keep.
Oh, he made lots of mistakes. That was clearly one of them. I want to make sure you're not going down the same road. So 2.5 years left, what's your lease payment?
My lease payment, well, after they start taking lease payments, they give me a 3-week grace at the beginning. It's $910 a week for the first 6 months. That's $2,500 down and then $600 a week is what it really boils down to.
So that
after
30
months, I lose $100 a week. And then after the next month, I lose another 50 because they have a what they call a performance bond to where if I decide to buy the truck, they'll apply that to my balloon payment.
Yeah, so they love to complicate these things, and the more I listen, the more complicated it's getting. But $3,600 a month for the first 6 months puts us at $20,000, very close to it.
Right.
And then you've got another year of let's just call it $3,000 a month. That's another $36,000. Think about those numbers for a second. We're up to $50,000 to $60,000 invested, and when we come back, I'll talk about why that is so risky. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rothfeld. All right, a quick heads up. We've got two more segments that I want to record today, and other than the question I have right now, I am out of questions. So we're going to come back, do another segment so I can finish up this one. If we just run out of questions, I'm just going to quit for the day. So I can guarantee you, if you press 1 on your phone right now, I'll keep going, and we'll get to as many of them as we can. So the sooner you press 1 on your phone, question, a comment, a topic, higher the odds are I'll get to you. So here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rothford. The website is letstruck.com. I'm going to head back to Pennsylvania. I was talking to Thomas. So, Thomas, where I want you to start refocusing is you called me to ask about what you should be doing 2.5 years from now, and I think what you should be doing right now is much more important because what we just looked at is, let's say that we do some numbers, we do some accounting, and we find out right. that you're making 32 cents a mile. And so and that's critical. What if we find out you're doing 20 cents a mile? My guess is you'd be running the other way.
Right.
But
well,
some guys
actually,
will look at it and say,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
You'd be okay with that?
No, well, I would be if, say, it was in the last 6 months of the lease, because after that, the truck's mine. And then I can move wherever I need.
Yeah, here's the risk. And I just had a caller like this. He got through 3 years of a lease, got down to the last 3 months, and the company went out of business. He's screwed.
He gets nothing, zero. And you might think that that's rare. It's not rare at all. Going out of business isn't the only thing that could screw you out of this. I just went through. You're going to have 50 to 60 grand invested in this truck in the next 2 years, still have 6 months left, and the company can cancel the contract at any time they want for no reason.
Right.
The company could go out of business. The company could get bought out by another company. The company could get new management and decide to get rid of their lease purchase program. You have no ownership rights to this vehicle at all.
Right. Well, truth be told, and you may think I'm crazy for saying this, but I did this because I'm bored running as a company driver. I want a challenge. I already know chances are I'm going to lose money my first year.
Hold on. That's bullshit. What kind of a challenge is this? There was no challenge to this. All you had to do was sign the paper. A challenge would be actually putting together a business plan, saving some money, and going and buying a truck that has your name on the title and setting up a real business. That would be a challenge. I get that you're bored. I get bored all the time. That's why I start new projects. I like being challenged. I don't see this as a challenge. I just see this as a whole bunch of risk.
Right, okay. Well,
now, at the very least, since I've already beat you up, at the very least, since you're in it, do your bookkeeping. Get a system in place. Because if you call me back in 2 months and you say, Kevin, I did it, here are my numbers, I'm making 56 cents a mile. Well, then hell, stay. Because now, even if they took the truck away and you lost it, so what? You were making more money than you probably would make driving anywhere else. So I'm not saying this is bad.
Well, I started out at 38 cents a mile as a company driver. So.
Well, so if you're only making 38 cents a mile here, then why take all the risk? Because that could go down next month. You never know what's going to happen with the truck. But if you're making 50 instead of 38, well, then, hell, I can put up with some risk. If you're making 20, I'd be out of there so fast it would make everybody's head spin. But the real thing is here, you until you know, and I know you just started 3 days ago, so that's good, and it's good you're asking. But you're asking about what should happen 2.5 years from now. I'm saying here's what should happen 2.5 days from now. You should be on an accounting system of some sort, so that in a month or two, we can start to see some numbers and you could make a good decision about this early on.
Okay. With that being said, I am a trainer. I've been a trainer for about a year now. My rate per mile, once I have a student on my truck, is going to drop from $1.12 to $1.02. However, my overall mileage for the week is going to go from somewhere between 3,000 to somewhere right around 5.5, 6.
Let me just tell you how I feel about that. That sucks. God, where do companies come up with this policy? Why do they think that putting a trainer in your truck lowers your cost? It increases your cost. Trainers are hard on fuel and hard on trucks. Trainees, I mean. So to say we're willing to pay you this rate, but if we put a trainee on your truck so you can train our drivers, we're going to pay you less per mile. That to me is insane.
Wow. All right,
you want me to do something that increases my cost? And clearly, I can tell you, your fuel cost will go up, your maintenance cost will go up, your tire cost will come up, and you have the headache of training and living with somebody in that truck, and their response to that is, oh, well, we'll pay you less.
Right.
Hell, if anything, you should be giving me more per mile, not less. And they offset this by saying, oh, but look at all the miles you're going to get. See, these fleets know that most owner-operators know next to nothing about business. That people who want to be owner-operators know next to nothing about business. They don't understand profit margins. They don't understand the numbers, and you're easy to convince. All you care about is the gross revenue. So we'll just promise you more miles, more gross revenue, and yet we're killing your profit margin because we're going to increase your expenses and decrease your revenue.
Okay, well, let me ask you this then. You say I need to be on some sort of accounting system. I had an idea. I was an office worker for 6 years before I started driving trucks. I was not an accountant, but I was around enough of them that I kind of sort of thought I had some sort of an idea. Evidently, I was wrong. So what do I need to be recording? And how would you suggest I do it? You're like, I'm not entirely sure how to break everything down. You know, fuel is obvious, maintenance is obvious, but how do I tally in food, a motel room if I wanted to get one for some reason, into my rate per
mile? Food is handled by per diem. Let me just cut to the chase here. Instead of trying to go through all the details, I'm just going to blatantly promote my software because, hands down, it's the best way to do this. If you said to me, hey, I love writing spreadsheets, I'm just going to track my own. Knock yourself out. But we've built the best system possible to track this kind of stuff, and we'll even show you how to use it and set it up for you. So the answer is just call us. We'll set up your accounting. We'll show you how to use it, and you won't have to figure out any of that stuff on your own. We have guidelines, what goes in what category. We'll train you. So just call us and get started on this and get the numbers. That goes for anybody. If you decide you don't even want to do the paperwork yourself, we have a program where we'll do it all for you. And you'll still have these numbers in front of you. And if you called me with these kinds of questions, I would be able to just go in and look at your numbers and give you even better advice. Let's go to Virginia. John, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, how are you doing today?
Good. What's on your mind?
I'm going to be a little easier on you.
Oh, good.
We've spoke before, I'm getting ready in probably the next week and a half. I'll be jumping over to Landstar. I'm actually a choice owner-operator with Snyder right now, and I'm jumping over there. My business plan shows what I plan on in probably the next couple of years, and I know I always look at kind of what's going on now, and I listen to you, and I want to get my carrier back again. I was a carrier back as a hotshot a couple of years ago, so I still have I can just go reinstate my DOT and MC, well, just DOT. But what I'm looking for is kind of, I listened to Kenny the other night, and he had somebody on there from an insurance company, and they were talking about how expensive it is for new carriers now and how difficult it is. Is there a method that you can do from this point to that point within the next year or so that maybe taking that step and getting my own bobtail instead of letting the carrier do it? I know you can't get the other insurance. The carrier has to carry that. But are there things like maybe my IFTA, if I do my own IFTA, will that enable insurance to track kind of my history a little bit better?
Let me, the music's playing. That's a great question. Let me get to a break, and we will come back and talk about that. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Thank you.
Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. I'm going to get right back to the phone calls. I was talking with John in Virginia. So, John, as far as I know, all the insurance companies are really looking at is how long you've had the authority. I just don't think it's going to matter, you know, having your own non-trucking or comprehensive, whether you get it through Landstar, which they've got a great deal. You could go out on your own. And if you do decide to go out on your own, I would call several insurance companies and explain that this is your plan and you would like to start using their insurance and possibly build that relationship and ask them if it would make any difference. I wouldn't just randomly choose your own insurance. I would talk to an agent, explain what you're trying to do, see if it's going to do any good. And at the very least, you're at least building a relationship and, you know, finding out about customer service and billing. And it certainly couldn't hurt, but I don't know that it's going to be a big help. Again, they're looking at your time as a carrier, and we all have to start somewhere.
Right, right. Yeah, I just didn't know if there was little things you could do in between to kind of soften the blow a little bit if you were able to. I know I was looking at possibly I'm an LLC now. If you started an LLC with a different trucking name and filed for your authority through it and then, you know, went forward with that, couldn't you actually stay on leased until you were ready to pull the plug and do something with that corporation? It would be a different truck or anything. Is that possible, or is it not even worth going that route?
It's really, in my opinion, not worth going that route. Now, we don't have any details on this. I don't want anybody calling us to ask about it. But we are working with a company on a program that would be kind of revolutionary in that it would allow somebody to be leased to a carrier, also have their own authority, and use insurance and pay for it only when you were running a load under your own insurance. It's almost impossible to do right now, but we're working with a company. If we can solve a couple more issues, that may be able to happen. And if it does, we'll let everybody know. But again, don't call our office because nobody in our office has any details about this. It's just something. I've had one meeting with the company. I need to schedule some more time to get back with them. But right now, I would say no. Don't.
Okay.
Try to do anything too weird. Go lease the Landstar. If you want to start talking to some private insurance companies, and you could ask them the question, hey, if I start now with my comprehensive and my non-trucking, do we build a relationship? Is that going to help me? You know, because at this time, I'm going to want to start moving over to my own authority. And I would just ask them.
Okay. That sounds good. Well, that's what I wanted. I needed to know. I just didn't know if there was any steps I could take in between, and I wanted to kind of etch those into the plan and say, hey, at this time I need to start doing this. But listen to Kenny, and you know, he's given out a lot of information, and it's a lot of real good information, and it kind of makes you wonder sometimes if there's a way to get yourself ready for that step when you're ready to do it. So, but I appreciate it. I appreciate everything you do.
You're welcome. And like I say, we're working on some ideas, so we'll keep you informed as that starts to develop. We're going to head off to Texas. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Question on M14 red top. Is there a difference between that or two different 14s? Coming?
There is. They're not a big difference. In fact, it's not even enough of a difference that I would worry about it. It's just different. Kind of, we could call it different models with different horsepower, torque settings, some other things, but it can all be changed anyway. So that would never be a criteria for me. If I can get any N14, that's a good solid engine.
Okay, I appreciate that, and that's all I had today. And one more comment on that guy that you had on like the first hour on the taxes. If he has them for 6 months, one day or something, I think I would claim them.
I kind of had
it. Say that again.
The taxes for the, he had his nephew or niece living with him.
Yeah.
And it's like once one day, I think he can claim them.
He can legally, and he is the legal guardian. Well, even if it's not the legal guardian, she is clearly his dependent. The problem runs into trying to keep some peace in the family, or if somebody else, you know, just insists and actually makes the tax claim on their return, and then you do it, even though you're right, you are opening yourself up for more scrutiny because the IRS doesn't know who's right until they start digging into the situation to figure it out. So
yeah,
you are running a little bit of risk, and I think for them right now, it was just easier to keep the peace in the family. I mean, I agree. It is their dependent. But if they claim her and the mother claims, it will throw a flag immediately at the IRS, and the IRS now has to come in, and we've got to prove who's dependent. So I prefer not to invite the IRS in, and in this case where you have a mother who is going to fight it, I would just let her have the dependent, but I would certainly claim the pay, which is a much better deduction anyway. Let's go to Utah. John, welcome to the program.
Yeah, Kevin, how you doing today?
Good.
All right.
What can I help you?
I got a 05 Freightliner. I know you hate that truck or hate that year, but that's what I ended up with after somebody tore up my 97 Volvo. So anyway,
okay.
I've done a lot of work to it and everything, but it's got a 10-speed and 336 rears.
Oh, that's a lousy combination.
Yes, it is. I'm getting about 7.55 right now. Well, I was. I had the top end, had a lot of work done on the top end, and put a set of the exhaust manifold, and I've done some work through Pittsburgh Power and some through my own mechanic. But I'm just wondering, because I've looked at the price on a 13-speed, but still at 336 rears, I don't know about.
Well, if we have a 13-speed, the 336 can work pretty well because from 55 to 60, you can run in 12 very efficiently. And then anytime you want to go faster, you can run in 13. So the 13-speed and the 336 gives us a little more flexibility, but it's about half the price to just change the rear ends instead of changing the transmission. So it really comes down to how much you want to invest. We could replace the differentials with, say, 355s or 370s, depending on how fast you like to drive, for about $4,000. How much have you gotten the price on doing a 13-speed?
Well, I've looked at about $4,200 plus $2,500 to install it. But like I said, I'm running a 10-speed, so I don't know if that's a good price or no.
That's not a bad price. I mean, but that sounds to me like just a used transmission, not reconditioned or a remand.
No, I believe it's a reman coming out of a Truck Pro.
Wow, I think that's an excellent price for a reman 13-speed. So I have no problem with the price. It comes down to, you know, how much you want to invest. If you're okay with that price, the 13-speed and the 336s actually gives you, it makes the truck a little more drivable, gives you some more options. Or you could probably get away with $3,000 to $4,000 changing to 355s or 370s. So it really comes down to how much you want to spend. Either one of them would be fine.
Okay. Yeah, because I got a little over 1,000,000 miles on this. And like I said, I just spent $6,000 on the motor this last week. And then back in October, I spent about four up at Pittsburgh Power. So,
yeah, you know, having a million miles on the transmission, it doesn't mean we couldn't get another 500,000. But this would be one of those times where $6,000 or $7,000, the truck's more drivable, we're going to improve fuel economy a little bit, and we have a transmission that's going to last us probably the rest of the life of the truck. So, yeah, certainly wouldn't be a bad thing. The music's playing. I've got to get out of here. We'll see you next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, thanks, everybody. We will see you back here tomorrow.